Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. Well, they said the end of the legislative session was going to be boring. Au contraire.
Indeed. We begin by looking at the reaction from lawmakers this week about what some are calling Lululands.
The New York Times broke the story last week about how some stipends, commonly referred to as Lulus, aren't going to Senate committee chairs, but instead are going to vice chairs. Three members of the Independent Democratic Conference, who along with the Senate Republicans control the chamber, receive these stipends even though they are not actually committee chairs. The Republican leaders of those committees have separate leadership stipends instead, which are slightly more lucrative. On Saturday evening, the Senate GOP put out a memo from their counsel's office which stated that the stipends were in accordance with the law and the state constitution. With the legislature back in Albany this week, reporters had a chance to ask questions to members of the IDC and Senate GOP about the story, which broke late last week.
The Lulus, is it? Oh, do you think it's okay to give senators stipends for the equivalent of serving on a committee chairmanship when they don't actually serve?
There was a legal opinion that was rendered and actually dispersed to the media yesterday, or actually on Saturday, so I would ask you to refer to that.
What are you in agreement with?
It's actually a legal opinion that says that it's constitutional and legal under state law.
And you agree with that?
It's a legal opinion.
Are you worried about the optics, though?
It's a legal opinion that was issued, and it says that it's constitutional and lawful, and that's all I know about it.
So. Thank you, folks.
Hello, everyone.
We have to get to session.
Hello, everyone. Next press conference, I want everyone like this here.
Can you explain the receiving a stipend for being a vice chair, the committee chair that you listed as?
Well, look. The controller has put out a statement, and he talked about that the Senate has discretion and declares who receives the stipends based on the practice of the House. There was also a legal memo that was put out by the majority counsel to talk to that issue. So it's about making sure that we follow the practice of the House. And if the Senate has done that as practice of the House, then that's what it is. It's also very clear that it doesn't necessarily mention that it doesn't. So here's the thing. Based on what the controller has said, the bottom line here is that we have, the Senate has the discretion, right, just like the Assembly has the discretion, to assign stipends. And that's what happened in this case based on the practice of the House. And that's what's been happening for some years. I'm glad you asked that question, because here it is. When I was in the mainline Democratic Conference, I was making $14,500. And currently, I received a stipend of $12,500. So I took a pay cut. So I'm glad you asked that question.
I think it's very clear. The controller said that it was within state law to grant a stipend, even for a vice chair. At this time, they have no intention of taking back any money. So I think it's very clear that my members, especially in the Independent Democratic Conference, who worked tremendously hard, held it out in a very transparent manner that they were indeed vice chairs of committees, and they'll continue to be vice chairs of committees and accept their Lulu or stipend, which they're entitled to.
Yeah, but your members were paid as chairs when they weren't, and I think that's something that when it became public that people are having a hard time.
Well, that's nonsense, because you're not a lawyer, and I think it's been very clear that what happened was, when a letter goes from the Senate president to the controller's office itemizing what each committee is, it's actually a coding where they actually put in the amount when that committee isn't being used. And it's very clear that individuals can't enjoy two stipends. So if someone chooses to get a leadership position, then that committee still has a stipend attached to it. And I think it's very clear, according to the state constitution, that the individual gets to accept that Lulu, whether or not they have any connection with that committee, and a vice chair is certainly a connection to that committee.
So you're not saying that you have to be a lawyer to understand this, right?
No, I'm just saying you're not a lawyer and certainly not a very fair reporter either in your reporting. So you came out sort of to say early on that somehow we were the only ones getting Lulus. Hey, if you don't like stipends and you don't think stipends should be what we do here in Albany, that's another thing. But to say somehow the members of the Independent Democratic Conference were kind of bought off through stipends is ridiculous and ludicrous.
I think you know our feelings as to whether or not Karen DeWitt is a fair reporter. For more on this story and others, we turn to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, who will moderate our reporters' roundtable.
All right, for more on this week's happenings at the Capitol and thereabouts, I'm happy to be joined at the reporters' roundtable by a couple of newbies. David Howard King, who is editor and associate publisher of The Alt, a news weekly here in the Capital Region. Dan Clark, a reporter with PolitiFact and The Buffalo News. And from the Times Union's Capital Bureau, Matt Hamilton, a returnee. All right. Well, we just heard from a lot of lawmakers, very upset, a lot of agita over the controversy over legislative stipends and whether or not they're appropriate. You could hear the anger clearly in Jeff Klein's voice as he slagged my friend and colleague Karen DeWitt. Now we hear that there is an investigation, potential investigations, into this matter being conducted by the Attorney General's Office and the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District. Of course, an investigation doesn't mean that any charges are going to be preferred, but it certainly is troubling for the Senate leadership and the Independent Democratic Conference.
It's a huge victory for the Senate Democrats. Just a few days ago, the Senate leader, Senate Democratic leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins called for this. She called for some kind of legal intervention to this, so it's a huge victory for them. I'm sure that the Senate Republicans and the IDC are not thrilled about this, but again, it doesn't mean that it wasn't legal. It just means that somebody's looking into it at this point.
Right. Well, I guess the question would be how long of a victory is it? How long does it sustain? I mean, if it's an investigation that doesn't lead to anything, did the Senate Democrats really gain anything in the end other than bad press for the IDC and the Republicans? And you know, this is a point that's been made over the past more than a week now since this first came out. I mean, this just does not look good, regardless of if there was illegality or whatever. It just doesn't look good for especially an IDC that in the eyes of Democrats and progressives is striving for legitimacy, striving to prove that this is a good thing to have a coalition government and to be bipartisan like this.
I think this is particularly bad for Republicans and the IDC because it speaks to an issue of taxpayer cash. And for them to say, you know, they're claiming that they should be using this money despite not perhaps having done the work. And it's the kind of issue that, although complicated, can be explained as a waste of taxpayer money.
Yeah, and the Senate GOP issued their explanation, their legal defense of this late last Saturday night, just about 3 days after the first stories started coming out from Jesse McKinley of the New York Times. And of course, it's been picked up by a lot of other outlets, including ours. And basically, the argument from David Lewis, who is the very talented legal mind, the Senate GOP counsel, was that these payments are appropriate, they are a legislative prerogative, nobody else has, no other branches of government have any business meddling in this, and essentially, look, these are Lulus that are assigned and we can reassign them to other people. But that seemed to be an argument of, we can do what we like.
Yeah, there are these three words that the IDC has been saying and the Senate Republicans in the state law, I believe they're directly connected wherein or therein.
Yeah,
and that's,
therein.
Yeah, that's their excuse for being able to do this. But there was this great story by Nick Reisman this week where he looked at Tom O'Mara, who's the vice chair of the Transportation Committee. And he's actually also chair of the Environmental Committee in the Senate. And before this Lulu scandal happened, according to Nick Reisman's story, Tom O'Mara hadn't showed up to a Transportation Committee meeting at all. So, you know, Senate Democrats chimed in on Twitter and said, if they're directly connected, wherein? Where is the work that they're doing?
Where's the senator?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
And I mean, there's that, you know, a very confusing set of three words in the English language that are very legally tenuous that you know, really this their argument hinges upon. But then also the Senate Republicans, they got upset that some stories were saying that there was false payroll information submitted to the state comptroller's office in order for these senators to get paid. And their argument was there was no payroll documents that were submitted. There were pay schedule documents that were submitted, basically saying that we're not holding these people out to actually hold these positions for which they're being paid. We're just saying that they should be paid the stipend that aligns with these positions.
Right.
Which is a whole nother, a semantic argument that does have, that's the crux of the legal argument here, to say that there's no illegality.
Yeah.
I think one of the telling things about this situation is the IDC has been very aggressive in defending itself since under attack by the left wing over the past few months after siding with the Republicans after Trump's victory. And we haven't heard much from their press people. We haven't seen them active on social media and really going after folks the way that they might have before. And I think it's because they'd like this to go away. I mean, you can explain it in any number of different ways, and yet it still comes down to people getting money for work perhaps they didn't really do.
Yeah, it speaks to the mainline Democratic narrative that the IDC is all about power and perks, which the IDC has worked very hard to push against. Matt mentioned the controller's office. When asked about this flap, Governor Andrew Cuomo gave a long response, and if you were doing a shot of whiskey every time the governor mentioned the controller, you would not have been able to handle heavy equipment, and you'd probably be dead. He basically putting it all off on the controller.
Yeah, he didn't directly say this is the controller's fault or anything like that, but he kept coming back to the question of, it's the controller's decision whether this is legal or illegal. Obviously, he must have determined that this is legal for them to be paid this, because he has not called up and said, I made a mistake, please give me the money back. So, and then the controller's office comes back and says that we are not a court of law, nor are we the Senate. Like, this is not our legal, our determination to make whether it's legal or not. And now, obviously, we have prosecutors potentially looking into whether there was illegality or not. But it's another round of jabs in a now long, icy relationship between the controller and the governor that goes back to all sorts of other things. I mean, earlier this week we saw an audit from the comptroller's office that slapped at the Empire State Development over a lack of proper reporting that they do. So it's just another round in Democrats fighting Democrats.
Yeah, and it certainly doesn't help the feud between Tom DiNapoli and the governor. And the question for me really becomes, if this investigation leads to anything, who is the person who is indicted or prosecuted, I guess? Would it be the majority leader? Would it be the staff of the Senate? Because there's an argument made. Patty Ritchie, for example, says she didn't know that she was being paid the stipend as a vice chair for a committee rather than the chairmanship that she was getting. She didn't know that. And I don't know if that's accurate or not. We have Pam Helming, who is just going to give her stipend back. She's kind of washing her hands of it. So this is a sticky situation. I don't know how it's going to work out for them.
When Pam Helming said, I'm not going to take that Lulu, it's almost like, but the majority leader says that these Lulus are perfectly legit and okay.
Yeah.
So it's like, do you disagree with that, Pam Helming?
And it's odd to see Senate Republicans not working lockstep on an issue.
Yeah.
You rarely see that. And so it does indicate that this might be trouble for some in the long run. But I think the governor's comments about the comptroller, are not out of the ordinary, but also speak to his want to distance himself from this mess. And a lot of people obviously have been working to connect him to the IDC and the Senate Republicans. And we all know that it's generally part of his preference for them to work that way. So I think, again, he was putting the blame on his enemy and saying, you take ownership of this. I don't want a part of this.
All right. Well, moving on to something that the legislature might actually accomplish. The Senate this week passed a bill that would have advanced the effective date of the expansion of ride hailing to various other parts of the state. Because we have a holiday coming up and people like to drink during that
July
holiday.
July 4th.
Yes.
And if this passes the Assembly, becomes law, it's implemented June 29th. It's 10 days earlier than the July 9th implementation date currently. One would think that if this does pass the Assembly, there would be conversations with the executive. How quickly can you sign this? And also, 10 days, the Department of Motor Vehicles has to put forward the regulations that govern ride hailing. So there would obviously have to be a conversation with them about can you speed it up by 10 days to make sure that the regulations are in place. It sounds like the Assembly is probably going to do this, right? So it would be a small political victory after this is what, you know, upstaters especially overwhelmingly asked for earlier this year.
We burned up a lot of time talking about state controversies. Believe it or not, the White House has been embroiled in some controversies this week as well. Just a few. What peril, increasing peril, does President Trump's troubles present to marginal Republicans here in New York? I'm thinking of Elise Stefanik, John Faso, just around here in the Capital Region. There are, of course, others. I mean, are they up against it?
This is really hard for them because, and I feel like this wasn't an issue until this year, but they have this issue now of town halls where people really want to hear from them because a lot of people in New York aren't so sure about our new president. And there are these groups around the state who want to put people in town halls and just kind of yell at them. So there's that whole issue. But it's hard for somebody like Elise Stefanik and John Faso who believe that, for example, climate change is real and it's caused partially by man. And the president is trying to cut EPA funding and they don't really see a connection there. And so they are kind of acting as surrogates for the president, which is very hard at this point because he's doing a lot on Twitter, he's doing a lot in public, just making a lot of claims out there. So it's kind of their job to respond to it in a way that they can't say that they don't support him, but at the same time, they can't really wholeheartedly agree with what he's saying. And I think that's really difficult for them.
And they have room, I think, now to step back a little bit in their defense, to separate themselves, because as we've seen, the Trump administration is in a little bit of chaos, and their cachet in Washington and their sort of the fear of the Trump administration and what might come from not directly supporting them is lowering. I spent some time talking to Paul Tonko over the last 2 weeks, and it's interesting because
Congressman from right around here in the Capital
Region.
Yes,
sir.
Yeah. Democrat.
He's trying to, he said to me very forcefully, I'm not willing to say the I word yet, meaning impeach, but he is willing to say investigate. He's also where some other Democrats are willing to go into other Republican districts like Faso's and sort of hold town halls and be aggressive against their Republican counterparts. He's more holding the ground and not interested in causing that sort of fuss.
Yeah. All right, well, that is where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much to David Howard King from The Alt, Dan Clark from PolitiFact and The Buffalo News, and Matt Hamilton from The Times Union. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
All right, thanks, Casey. Through her many pieces of legislation over the years, Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal has earned a reputation as a fierce animal advocate. This year, she's introduced a bill to stop a procedure she calls appalling. Cats scratch.
Exactly.
It's what they do. They scratch in the litter box, sometimes family members, and at times objects in the house. Because of the latter, some owners will turn to getting their felines declawed, a practice that's been around for decades. But if Manhattan Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal has her way, New York State would become the first in the nation to ban the practice.
The most often cited reason why people have their cats declawed is because they want to protect their own furniture, which is, it's just impossible to think that you're going to harm the bodily integrity of an animal because your furniture means more to you. And, you know, people are coming around with more and more people consider animals a member of their family. And so this bill to ban the declawing has resonance for them.
Dr. Charles Brockett, an upstate veterinarian, describes the process.
What you need to do in order to not have a claw is that you have to not only take the claw, but you have to get back past that nail bed. And what that essentially means from a standpoint of procedure is to go back into the joint that is behind the nail bed and the equivalent of the first part of your finger, essentially. Come back here into the joint, come down through there, remove the claw, the bed, and that piece of bone that's attached to it, and then you would kind of have a open hole there at the end. You usually close that most commonly with tissue glue.
One of the organizations against the legislation is the New York State Veterinary Medical Society. They say vets use the procedure as a last resort only after various educational and training efforts are found to be unsuccessful. Executive Director Jennifer Maurer went on to tell us in a statement that we worry that this law will have negative impacts on cat ownership.
for individuals with children, the elderly with certain conditions, or those who cannot cope with the behavioral issues of their beloved pet, we fear they will turn them over to a shelter service. The American Veterinary and Medical Association reports that 72% of cats that are turned over to animal shelters are euthanized.
Veterinarians, some are wonderful people and others are looking for the buck. So, sort of like supersize at McDonald's. We'll do a spay or neuter, and then while they're under, we'll declaw them. It's a lucrative business. Some people don't want to give that up.
Dr. Brockett, who is a past leader of the state's Veterinary Medical Society, says the surgery is hardly a moneymaker for him. In fact, since 2013, he's performed the procedure just 27 times, an average of just over 6 a year. He says people are less likely to do it now than 20, 30 years ago.
There weren't all these discussions about what the social, mental impact is on the patient. You know, so you didn't talk about, well, how many litter boxes do you have? How many cats are in the house? Do we have scratching posts? Do we have places in the house where they can elevate themselves and get up above? And, you know, those discussions didn't occur, so I think far more cats got declawed.
We visited the Mohawk Hudson Humane Society just outside Albany to get their opinion on the bill.
We don't declaw cats here, and we don't support declawing, only as a last resort, as maybe a difference between life and death for a cat. So, for example, there are organizations, not locally, but that do have such a high population that somebody declawing a cat and taking it home may make the difference between that cat having a life or having no life at all. We're not in that position here, and so we don't support the declawing. It's invasive, it's unnecessary, and there's other things you can do, like trim their nails, use soft paws over top of their nails to keep them from scratching, and providing a good scratching post.
Dr. Brockett agrees that it's important to have a conversation between the vets and the owners about all options. And that's what bothers him the most. If the bill passes, owners won't have an option.
As a veterinarian, what I'm not thrilled with is the legislature wanting to insert itself into my professional capacity. I am the one who is the authority. I have gone through the classes, I've had the instruction, I spent 8 years of my life becoming very educated about these things. And I think that it comes down to being involved in the details of the procedure and knowing the situations in which you apply the procedure.
The bill would allow the procedure when necessary for therapeutic purposes, but outside of that, the penalty would be a $1,000 fine. This is the third year Assemblywoman Rosenthal has introduced this. She says she has more sponsors here in 2017, but it is unclear if the legislation will make it out of committee. Regardless, she says she will continue to fight for the bill each year until it gets passed. Because according to her, declawing is a cruel practice that's simply for the convenience of the owner and not the well-being of the cats.
If someone takes a cat, a dog, any other non-human life into their hands, they have an obligation to provide it comfort and food and not harm it and look out for its best interest. Declawing looks out for the owner's best interest, disregards the needs of the cats, and I aim to stop that.
Last question, do you think this will pass this year? And if not, will you continue to push for it?
Well, I'm tenacious with my bills, and I really truly believe in this bill, so I will keep pushing until it does pass.
And that leads us to this week's New York Now poll question. Do you support a bill that would ban the declawing of cats? Let us know by going to our website, nynow.org. There you can stream all of our past programs and follow links to us on social media, including Twitter, where our handle is @nynow_PBS. You can also subscribe to our program wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget, you can follow the daily activity down at the Capitol on the Capitol Confidential blog. We have a link to it on nynow.org. It is also at timesunion.com. Casey, you'll notice no mentions of cat scratch fever by Ted Nugent in my story there.
That was strong. That was a bold pick.
A big event coming up Monday and specifically Tuesday next week.
Yeah, Monday, open dress rehearsal. Tuesday, the 117th annual Legislative Correspondents Association show. Musical comedy review. with members of the Capitol Press Corps and our alumni, singing with varying degrees of success, offering japes and comedy at the expense of state government.
And the big question every year is, will Andrew Mark Cuomo show?
He has before presented a rebuttal. The responses That's from right. politicians are known as rebuttals. Mm-hmm. He has presented videos. He has very graciously
Video.
Showed up. Yeah, he has never done a live rebuttal. That's the right. first governor in, I believe, 117 years.
historic, as never, Governor Cuomo would say.
To never have appeared at any point to give a live rebuttal during his tenure. He has showed up for the cocktail party right. before the show occasionally, but it will be a laugh riot as it is every year.
Well, Governor, it's on you now. We're looking for you to break tradition here.
Indeed. All right, well, we say goodbye today with footage from downtown Saratoga Springs, summer-like weather. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching. We'll see you again next time right here on your local PBS station.